Welcome to Stories in the Key of Light. I'm Jen Mangloss.
And I'm Monica Roman Green. We're two spiritual directors who discuss Christian spiritual themes we see in films across genre.
And in honor of St. Patrick's Day, we're talking about the 2009 Irish film The Secret of Kells, directed by Tom Moore and Nora Twomey.
This is Cartoon Saloon's debut feature animated film, and it follows Brendan, a young member of the Abbey of Kells in the 900s AD.
So just the other day.
Brendan must decide between his uncle's waves of defensiveness and strength, or following his passion and gifts for illuminating sacred manuscripts.
This is our warning that we give each episode. We're not holding back from spoilers, so we encourage you to watch this film. You can rent this movie on a variety of streaming sites.
And it's well worth it.
It is.
So, Jen, initial observations.
Yes. Well, I first saw this because this film actually used to be on Netflix. Sadly, it's not as of this taping. But it came on Netflix around 2011, and I watched it. I loved it. And since it was so close to St. Patrick's Day, I hosted a party for St. Patty's, and I played this film for the group. Basically,
brilliant.
I wanted everyone to love this movie as much as I did.
Aww.
And they were a group of grad students from my seminary.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and a lot of them were training to be spiritual directors, so
perfect.
It resonated, yeah. During grad school, I was interested in Celtic expressions of the Christian faith.
Oh,
and
so rich.
When I graduated, my friends gave me a framed print of the Lindisfarne Gospel, which is another illuminated manuscript.
Wow.
And it's just gorgeous, and I think it's the opening page from the Book of Matthew. And it's and for them, they gave it to me because they wanted to honor it's a combination of theology and spiritual formation and creativity.
Yes.
And these illuminated manuscripts are such a beautiful blending of these traditions.
Absolutely.
I've been interested in this subject matter for years. And the first time I watched this, I was so struck by how this movie was a living work of art.
Yes.
And I guess, in a sense, every animated film is, because it's these drawn images, but especially The Secret of Kells.
Yeah.
And it's a living depiction of the book itself.
Mm-hmm.
And this most recent viewing for the podcast, I got chills in the moment right before Brendan opens the book for the first time.
Oh.
Like, there's just something, you feel the awe.
Yeah.
And even if you know nothing about the Book of Kells, there's something in that moment in the movie where they really convey there's something special here. This isn't just a regular old book.
Yeah.
And so just that ability to create that in an audience is such a special gift for a filmmaker, and it stuck out to me this last time.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, and how about you?
I first saw this like right after it came out on DVD. So as soon as I like could, I don't recall seeing it in the movie theater, but I do remember being just gobsmacked is a good word.
Ooh,
for
that
it.
Is. Yeah.
Yeah, by the and just captivated. It's so gorgeous visually. I've never seen anything like it. Even though Cartoon Saloon has done a few more films, there's something so rich about The Secret of Kells. And clearly my excitement about this visual beauty and my experience of the film carried, because on our first Christmas in Toronto, my husband went to the DVD store and bought me a copy. So our copy is actually Canadian, like all the previews are in French.
Oh, that's why I did notice. Listeners, I borrowed Monica's copy of the DVD, and I was wondering why there were all these weird Canadian previews on before the movie.
Because my version is Canadian.
It all makes sense now.
Yeah, and then he also bought me to go with that an adult coloring book of images from the Book of Kells.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm that enamored with how beautiful it is and Celtic art in general. I remember I did this while I was living in Toronto. I bought myself a book on how to draw Celtic knots.
Ooh.
It is really hard.
Yeah.
I pick it up occasionally and then I put it back down again. Like I try and I think, wow, I'm just trying to draw one knot. I can't imagine what it was like to draw the actual Book of Kells or this hand-drawn beautiful film.
Yeah.
So it only makes me more impressed with the film, my own attempts to try and do Celtic art.
So let's shift on to the spiritual themes. What are the spiritual themes that you noticed in this film, Monica?
I found that the spiritual themes, this is again one of these films that's not an explicitly Christian film, but my goodness, there are so many spiritual themes in it, particularly Christian spiritual themes. It's because the filmmaker's goal in making this film flows out of their inspiration to do something like Studio Ghibli does. Studio Ghibli films are distinctly Japanese in their animation, particularly Hayao Miyazaki. And so these young Irish animators decided they wanted to make an utterly Irish cultural film. Hmm. They wanted everything about it to flow entirely out of being Irish. They told a deep Irish story in beautiful Irish ways. And if you're going to do that, if you're going to tell a historical story of Ireland, this culture was shaped by Christianity. The Christian themes have to flow naturally out of it, mm-hmm. in and through it. So what they did is they chose to tell the story of the creation of the Book of Kells, which is considered Ireland's greatest historical treasure.
Yeah.
It is a masterwork of illuminated manuscripts of the four Gospels. So immediately you're in Christian territory, right? And then, like with many historical artifacts, there's lots of different theories as to how it was created. But they chose, Tom Moore and his crew decided to tell a traditional story, which is that it was started by St. Columba on the island of Iona. And by the way, they use his traditional Irish name, which is Colm Killa. That's Columba, if you know anything about
it. Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. And that after it was started on the Isle of Iona, that it was then brought to the Abbey of Kells by St. Aidan, where it was eventually completed and then ultimately kept at the Abbey of Kells, which is why it's called the Book of Kells. Again, while it's not an explicitly Christian film, in choosing to make such a culturally and historically Irish film, they can't help but to have it steeped in Celtic Christianity and its themes. So that's why it's very easy for us to pull all these things out. So what are some specific themes that you saw in the film?
Well, for me, there's a big focus on light and illumination.
Of course. Yes.
And with that, too, this big play on light and darkness specifically.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, when he goes to get the crystal,
yes.
you know, he goes into this dark place
mm-hmm.
with Crumb Crook. When talking about the book, they talk a lot about light and illumination. And the book is said to bring light to those who engage with it.
Yeah, in fact, the original name for the film I found was Rebel, Turning Darkness into Light.
Yeah.
Right? And in the movie, they even say as they're building up the beautifully Irish storytelling about what the book is about, they actually say that the book is rumored to be so full of light that it can blind sinners.
Ugh. I love that. Well, and there's actually a moment in the film when the book is literally lit up.
Yeah.
It's illuminated.
Yeah.
And, you know, manuscripts with images and decoration, like the Book of Kells, are known as illuminated manuscripts. We've mm-hmm. used that phrase a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
And they're called illuminated due to the fact that frequently the artist creating these books, the illuminators would use gold or silver
mm-hmm.
in their creation.
Yes.
But I think the term also makes sense when you consider the Bible itself. Not every illuminated manuscript is taking biblical text and creating an illustration, but a lot of them are. Yeah, or
they're
at least,
prayer books
yeah.
or they're the Bible itself.
And it reminds me of the passage that says, you know, thy word is the lamp unto my feet. And this idea that the Word of God does bring illumination to those who not just read it, but engage with it.
Yes.
And so sometimes, being in a Western culture, we can talk about the Bible just from purely a reading and understanding mindset. But well, I love that this movie gets to that. No, there's something deeper going on. There's this illumination happening.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible is supposed to light the way. It's supposed to point to Christ.
Yes.
And the film doesn't make this direct connection.
No.
Because like we said, you know, they're dealing with Christian tradition, but they're not necessarily naming things
right.
specifically Christian.
Mm-hmm.
But they're dealing with a gospel manuscript.
Right. They're dealing with a gospel manuscript in an abbey with a Celtic cross in the center and brothers who are drawing and illuminating manuscripts.
Yes. So it doesn't make the direct connection, but I see it leaving space for that kind of interpretation.
Sure.
But really, the filmmakers do seem to speak to the reality that the art itself,
mm-hmm.
the illumination, isn't just about the work of a talented artist. These images are inspired, and
yes.
they reflect God's glory.
Absolutely.
You know, another thing that interests me just about the Book of Kells itself, and this movie reminds me of that, is how these images are created. And you might remember in the film, there's a scene where they are looking for the Eye of Colm Kyll,
mm-hmm.
and it's lost. It was lost in Iona. And Brendan's able to find another one. And what it is, it's this crystal that kind of magnifies but also distorts what you're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose of that is because, to this day, art historians don't understand how these images were created based on what was available to the illuminators.
Wow.
In terms of how could you create such detailed drawings?
Yes. They're remarkable.
Yeah. In this time when How could you have created paintbrushes that small? How could you have seen that detailed?
Yeah.
Some people have even speculated that the brothers who worked on these manuscripts had an eye defect.
Wow.
That allowed them to see closer. And I don't know if that's true or not, and I don't know if we'll ever know on this side of life, but there's something so fascinating about these images and how they were created. And so the movie's trying to speak to, oh, this might be how this kind of detailed work was created.
Wow.
But that just, I don't know, the idea of that intrigues me as well.
Absolutely.
Such a masterpiece. I mean, you said this was Ireland's biggest, most treasured masterpiece, and it's so true.
Mm-hmm. It is gorgeous. You know, when you look at specifically the Book of Kells or other illuminated manuscripts that are Irish and Celtic, they are truly mesmerizing. And the film really does a gorgeous job of even animating the illuminations.
I know.
To make them more wondrous, like they come to life. And, you know, I've been fascinated with illuminated manuscripts since I was a teenager, actually. Mm. I saw an exhibit of the medieval Christian illumination, so not specifically of this time period, but a little bit later. I saw them at the Getty Villa here in Los Angeles. Before there was a big Getty, it was just the Getty Villa. It was that old. At that moment, what you're talking about, I felt that. The artistic care, the beauty that the artist used to illuminate scripture, to bring the light more to the surface of the actual piece of scripture, it's evident that it's holy inspiration. I had a holy experience seeing those as a teenager, and I like to think that their mere existence could be inspiration for all of us to enter into the sacred space of art making,
yes.
That we can always reach a little further and go a little deeper in joining God in our creations. But, you know, there's also a theme, too, about it being a book and how the book is supposed to be seen and not shut up behind walls, that it's supposed to be out there in the world. And so I kind of see those themes kind of playing together too, as we're talking about once you've seen it, something happens, so then it needs to be available to be seen,
yes.
Right?
The film also makes an interesting distinction between fear and safety.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
And it's interesting timing because I feel like this is something our society and the church is currently wrestling through. Where do we draw the line of wisdom?
Mm-hmm.
And wisdom's not bad. We want to engage and use the wisdom that God has given us.
Right. To be smart.
To be smart. You know, to not maybe go walking around in a neighborhood that's unsafe in the middle of the night with your life savings. You know.
Yeah. Wisdom.
You know, wisdom. But wisdom versus fear. And in the Bible, we read that perfect love casts out fear. Yet that's probably the area most of us struggle the most with, you know?
Yes.
I know that's true for myself. And even the abbot struggles.
Yes.
You know, he cares for these brothers. You don't always see that, but that does come through that. No, he cares so much for these brothers and he wants to protect the community.
Yes.
He feels this responsibility. But instead of seeking and trusting God, he enacts his own plans and puts his faith in these plans, that the plans will save Kells, not God.
The plans, the wall,
the wall.
The barrier that he's creating to keep them safe inside.
Yeah, and all of his preparations on the wall do not ultimately keep them safe.
No.
And I can't help but draw the connection with the border wall, and without getting into whether or not the wall should be built and the politics behind that, I do think we should consider this question. Who are we trusting with our safety? Ultimately, is it God? Can a wall ultimately make us safe? And I think this question is valid for every part of our life. Who are the people, places, or things that we put our trust in before God?
Right.
You know, I was in college when 9/11 happened, and it was the first time I started to ask these questions. I never imagined a world where the U.S. would be attacked, and I realized how much I'd put my trust in our government and military more than God. And I had this moment of seeing the error of my ways, like, Oh, I'm glad that we have a strong military. I'm glad that attack isn't a regular part of our existence. And yet, wars happen.
That's right.
We live in a broken world. So even if you do make the wisest decisions, we can't trust in the things we create to ultimately keep us safe.
That's right. And as I was watching the film, I was really struck, too, by how the abbot, his trust in the protection that he's created is so certain that you have a sense, this it sets up a foreboding that it's going to fail.
Yeah.
That it's going to fail. And I love what you're saying about that. what are the things that we put our safety in? It doesn't have to just be a wall. It can be anything else other than God that we're so sure is going to keep us safe that maybe it's our surety that's going to be more clear that it's not.
Yeah.
That we need to question that. And what I think is really interesting about this film is that the evil will come.
Yes.
There's no question that the evil is coming. So it's not a question of, is this bad? Are we really keeping bad out or not? Like, is the bad even really bad? No, evil is coming.
Yes.
The question is, how are you going to choose to put your faith?
Well, and Aiden, more than anyone, is the voice that pushes against this belief of the wall bringing safety.
That's right.
He who just escaped the Vikings. And I think that's so interesting. Mm-hmm. It stood out to me this most recent viewing is, my assumption is the person who just went under the attack is the one who'd be like, yeah, build that wall.
Right.
Build it higher.
Right.
But no, he's the one who's saying, no.
It's not going to work.
It's not going to work. Hmm. He is a voice of wisdom.
Yes, he
is. But he's mostly ignored. And yet I love Aiden's comment about the abbot. And he says this to Brendan. He kept you safe the best way he knew how.
Hmm. And such grace.
It is, and because the abbot isn't the villain.
No.
He's actually probably the character that most of us can relate to, if we're honest. Because it's not a lack of his trying. He's not apathetic.
No.
He's not just sitting there going, whatevs. No, he's working hard. And by the end, the abbot sees what the real gift was in his community, Brendan and the book.
Yeah.
There's something powerful and transformative about beauty. You know, last summer I visited Manzanar, one of the Japanese internment camps.
Here in California.
Yeah, and I went there with some friends, and what really impressed me, I've read about Manzanar, this was the first time I visited, but in this land that was miserable, I mean, miserably hot and dusty and windy, and apparently in summer it's icy cold. I mean, I don't think there's one good season to live out there. But the people who were held there created beauty through their community and through parks.
Hmm.
And the ruins of one of the parks was excavated, and you could walk through it. And it reminded me that beauty is a subversive force of good.
Mm.
God uses the unexpected to bring his kingdom. He uses beauty instead of bombs, the long, slow route rather than shortcuts.
Yep.
And like Ashley says, I've seen beauty thrive in the most fragile of places. And I can't help but think that's our God.
Yeah.
He doesn't use walls to protect his people. Sometimes he does.
Yeah.
But he's more creative than that.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I was also struck by the theme of fear and safety, not just in the general story, but also in Brendan's hero's journey within the story. Aiden can tell that something is holding Brendan back from stepping into that sacred artistic space that we're talking about. You know, that place of really stepping into his own as an illuminator. Aiden says he's going to have to face it. He tells the cat, he's going to have to face this. And when Brendan hears about the need for the Eye of Colmkilla, which is in the lair of Crom Cruach, okay, that's a
lots
lot of Irish.
Names, yeah.
Yeah, the lair of Crom Cruach. Brendan stumbles upon this in Ashley's forest, and she's afraid of it, and she rescues him from this deep, deep darkness that's sucking him in. But there's a treasure there.
There is.
There's a treasure there. This crystal he needs is somehow stuck there. And so he goes into his cave, which is part of the classic hero's journey. But it turns out that this is a deeply Christian illusion. Crom Cruach was an Irish deity of death and destruction in the film and was an Irish ancient deity who demanded human sacrifice for appeasement.
Oh, interesting.
So when Ashley says, he killed my mother and killed my people, that's what she's referring to. This is a real Irish story. And guess who stopped Crom Cruach?
Do tell. Who?
St. Patrick.
Oh.
St. Patrick that's brought...
fitting.
Isn't that great? St. Pat, bring that back around. St. Patrick...
He got rid of the snakes and he got rid of...
That's what they're referring to, basically, right? That he drove the demons, the snakes, out of Ireland. And one of them was Crom Cruach. Now, the true story is that he beat this idol down with a sledgehammer. But there's all these wonderful Irish stories about how he pushed the idol over, who was covered with gold and silver, and it dissolves as he pushes it over. And then the image of his Crozier, his hook, is on the side of the rock when it goes down. Like, great Irish storytelling. But it was St. Patrick who came in and said, no, Christianity will bring you life, not death.
Hmm.
That is then who Brendan is going to fight. And it's in this incredible Irish artistic image of this.
That moment is gorgeous.
Crazy snake who's trying to eat him. And how does he fight it? With his chalk.
Mm-hmm.
With his capacity to draw a circle and contain this. There's so much to this little hero's journey moment about fear and facing your fear and what it means to step into the gifts that you've been given. And then when he pulls the eye out, the snake is now blind and it starts to frantically chomp. And because it's grown so much, it starts to eat itself. And it becomes an image of the snake eating its own tail, which is a classic image throughout many cultures, mm-hmm. but it's an ancient symbol with many meanings. But one of them, it's about the integration of the shadow part of yourself into yourself.
Oh, interesting.
So we're talking about light and darkness and fear and safety. And one of the things that Brendan has to do as the hero is he has to go face his fear. Yeah. And he's lost his mother and father too, and we don't know why, but it's going in and facing death and choosing to use your gifts and to pull from death, to grip from its hands, the shadow side, to face your fear. And when he comes back with that, suddenly Brendan is an illuminator.
Yeah.
He's able to unleash his full artistic potential. So I love knowing how that's tied into the actual history of Christianity in Ireland, that who he's facing is literally the past, the Irish past, before Christ was known on the Emerald Isle through Patrick. So, you know, speaking of Celtic spirituality, as spiritual directors, it would probably be a good idea if we mentioned other resources we're aware of. If
yes.
This film entices you to learn more about this rich, rich history of Celtic spirituality. I'm just going to mention a few books, and then I know, Jen, you've got some things to add. One is the Celtic Daily Prayer Book from the Northumbria community.
Yeah, so I actually got to visit the Northumbria community back in 2012,
lucky Jen.
Which was exciting because I had used the Celtic Daily Prayer Book for many years in my times with God in the morning, and it was so lovely to get to sit and pray those prayers with the community in the mornings and in the evenings. And
there's the writings. I particularly like an Irish writer named David Adam,
mm-hmm.
who writes beautiful current Celtic poetry, but in the Celtic style, using their forms. Wonderful books of his. And then also, if you just want to look up any stories of the Irish saints, there's Brigid, who turned water into beer. I mean, what's not to love about Brigid? There's Patrick himself. There's his Lorica, which is the breastplate prayer, some of which is his, some of which has been attributed to him, but it is truly beautiful. It's the prayer that people know of that's, you know, Christ before me, mm-hmm. Christ behind me, Christ above me, Christ to the left of me, Christ to the right to me. It's a powerful spiritual prayer of warfare. And talk about protection.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I love in general about Celtic spirituality is, you know, sometimes in our Western practices of Christianity, everything's very boxed off. It's like, okay, this is our theology box, and this is our art box, and never shall the two meet. And that's not the case in Celtic spirituality. It's a very embodied form of prayer and practicing faith. You know, sometimes they would pray these prayers in icy cold streams, and which that might seem a little harsh, but there's this sense of they're so engaged with the land in which they lived.
Yes.
And then obviously the line between art and theology is not there. And then also, as spiritual directors, one of the things I loved about Celtic spirituality was that they have a long tradition of Anamkara, soul friends.
Yes.
These are people who are companions and help people journey in their experience with God, which is what Monica and I do.
That's what a spiritual director is. So there's a lot of richness in Celtic spirituality, and this is a perfect transition to talk about why. Let's talk about the film craft, Jen.
Yes.
What worked in this film?
Well, the animation.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Stylistically, it's gorgeous. It's like a painting. Like you're walking to a living museum. So, of course, a film about the Book of Kells should be beautiful. But the art serves another purpose. If you're familiar at all with the art found within the Book of Kells, you can see certain images and motifs reflected in Brendan's surroundings.
Yes.
Like, they were almost as if they were the inspiration for what he drew in the book.
Yes.
And I loved that. You know, you could almost turn off the sound and enjoy this film purely based on the gorgeous animation. Like, that would be enough.
Yeah, it's that beautiful.
It really is. It really honors the work of the Book of Kells in a really beautiful way.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. It is truly one of the most gorgeous hand-drawn animated films I've ever seen. And I watch a lot of animated films. But please, don't turn off the sound.
I know.
because on my last viewing, it became clear to me and my husband just how much the sound and the music really also contribute to the whole of this story. It gives you the full, rich Irish experience. It's Irish music. It's Irish instrumentation. It's the language itself. It's the accents. It's the dialogue. But you're right. But still, the visual can just take you away. I love how they put Celtic knots in the trees. There's like a Trinity knot in the tree that they climb. It's so beautiful.
They just kind of keep returning to this image of the circle.
Oh, that keeps
showing up throughout the picture.
There's so much. It's the kind of film you could watch and watch and watch and watch and never catch all of the detail they put into it.
It's so beautiful.
Okay, but we say that no film is ever perfect. So what didn't work?
I mean, there's not a ton jumping out at me.
Yeah, not me either.
I suppose if I have to be critical, the story could have been a bit stronger in terms of character development.
Yeah.
Some of the characters fall into traditional character tropes, but this could also be due to the film being geared towards children.
Yeah.
Normally, it bothers me in a film when everyone's just a trope. And I don't think everyone here is just a trope, but, you know, sometimes some of the Abbott's responses can feel like, oh, he's the stiff. He's the, you know, he doesn't get what's going on.
Right.
I guess they could have done more to make them all a little more nuanced. And so normally that would bother me in a film, but it really doesn't in this one. I don't think it takes away from the film.
And part of it, too, I think, is because they drew them stylistically. So
That's communicating
a lot of this as well. So if you're going to be, you know, the Abbott is tall and kind of square in that way, right?
And his shoulders are very hunched and prominent.
And he's very strong physically. At one point, they have his robe off and you see, right? Like, but very stylized. So that could be part of why it could feel like they're indicators, because they kind of are. That's the way it's been drawn. But yeah, I'm with you. The story does jump a little bit at times. Like, if you really think through, they kind of force some things here and there. But I'm telling you, just watch the movie.
Yeah.
You won't even notice any of that.
No, you really don't.
And you're still going to have a wonderful time. In fact, my DVD copy says right on the front cover, Academy Award nominee. And I looked at it last night and I thought, wait a second. How did this film not win an Oscar? Like, it is so beautiful. Well, I looked it up. It turns out that the year 2009 was an incredible year for animated films.
Oh, yes?
Yeah. So Secret of Kells was up for an Academy Award for Best Animated Feature against Coraline.
Ugh.
The Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Wes! My man!
The Princess and the Frog, another beautiful hand-drawn film. And the film all of them lost to, which would be Up.
Another film we've covered
another
here.
Another film we've covered already. And I literally thought to myself, well,
if you have to lose.
That's how good The Secret of Kells is.
Mm-hmm.
It could only lose to something as good as Up.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that good a film. So I'm happy to say there's not a lot that I would say is wrong with this film. Just enjoy it. Watch it again.
Yeah.
It's such a rich film experience.
Yeah, even I hadn't watched it probably since around 2011, 2012. And, you know, sometimes you have a really amazing first experience with a film and you come back years later and go, not so much. That's not the case with The Secret of Kells. It's just as enchanting and gorgeous, just a beautiful story as it was, you know, 6-7 years ago.
And, hey, let's make this recommendation. How about we recommend that this become people's annual St. Patrick's Day tradition?
I think that's a wonderful tradition.
Wouldn't that be a great thing that you already did it? You showed it to a group of people. So, like, I every year watch Easter Parade on Easter. I've been doing it since I was about 7 years old. Or I know my husband likes to throw a Groundhog Day party showing the movie Groundhog Day. Now we've got The Secret of Kells for St. Patrick's Day. We could have a whole Holidays at the Movies tradition.
I love it. Yeah.
That's
and
great.
I don't think you can find a better Irish film, even though there's some fantastic Irish films out there. I'm partial to Waking Ned Divine myself. that actually used to be one I used to watch on St. Patrick's Day, but I'm digressing.
So, those are our thoughts on The Secret of Kells. We hope that this stirred your imagination and love of film. For we believe, like the psalmist said, and how appropriate for this film, by God's light, we see light.
We are illuminated.
Yes.
We'd love to hear your thoughts. Our Twitter handle is @KeyPodcast, and our Facebook page is @KeyPodcast. You can find us on iTunes, Spotify, and other major podcasting apps. And if you have an iPhone, you can just ask Siri to find our podcast. Hey, Siri. If you like what you hear, we'd appreciate it if you leave a review and so other people can find out about our great show.
Editing and audio engineering is done by the brilliant Matthew Haggerty.
Go, Matthew.
And our in and out music is composed by Matthew Haggerty as well.
Double go, Matthew.
You've got it. We hope you'll join us next time for more stories in the Key of Light.